I'm David Cruz in Melbourne, Australia for Radio TC International. Fraser House is a series of programs about Dr. Neville Yeomans, the founder of the Fraser House Psychiatric Therapeutic Community in Australia. This extraordinary unit ran from 1959 to 1968 and was responsible for inducing many psychosocial innovations into Australian society. This series includes doctoral research into Neville Yeomans' work by Les Spencer, a behavioural scientist and clinical sociologist. I have Les with me in the studio.
Hi, David.
Les, I understand that for this program you're going to take us through three case studies relating to Fraser House.
Yes. This first one illustrates the therapy role that cleaners took at Fraser House. Recall that all staff attended big group, including the cleaners. Some of the cleaners became very insightful therapists, as the onlooker seeing most of the game. On one occasion mentioned by Neville, a cleaner spotted that a catatonic woman had drawn a beautiful horse in a moment of lucidity. The cleaner mentioned the catatonic drawing skills of this woman during the big group and suggested that a drawing pad and coloured pencil set be left beside her so that she may be prompted to stay lucid longer. This was done, and the catatonic patient did start to draw. To encourage her further, the cleaner all suggested and was implemented that a full painting kit was arranged to be placed beside her. After a time, a set of poster colours in pots were set up as well, and a nearby wall was designated by a sign that read, mentioning the person's name, and underneath it, mural space. In the end, this patient came out of her catatonia and painted beautiful big murals over a section of the unit. At one stage, she was running out of walls to paint, and this coincided with word being received on the grapevine that a fun-cutting inspection team would arrive that might recommend closing the unit if it was deemed too alternative. After the discussion in big group about this impending inspection, it was agreed that everyone would help in painting over the murals and returning the unit to white. When the inspectors arrived, they found all the staff in their white uniforms in a white unit, and the inspectors saw little that was out of the ordinary and okayed the unit. When the inspectors left, the mural painting resumed, and after a time this catatonic artist was able to return to living in society.
This is another example of what you're calling using the free energy. This woman was obviously very passionate about art. She had energy available for this even though she was generally catatonic.
Yes, that's a good observation, and it's an example of letting the natural unfolding context inform you on what to do next, just like Neville's father did on the farm. They needed to look normal to the inspectors, and they needed new white mural spaces for the artist, so they used this as a community challenge, and the whole community participated in painting the place white.
It also seems to me to be an example of how everything is interconnected and interdependent. Painting the unit would have become a theme that was conducive to coherence that you spoke about previously.
Exactly. This brings us to the next case, which is also about having the context as guide to action. Once Fraser House was underway, Neville put out a call to asylums throughout New South Wales that he would accept any and all Aboriginal people that they had. This offer was taken up, and eventually around 50 Aboriginal people and islanders were transferred to Fraser House. Apart from a few that needed full-time care because of associated medical conditions, all of these Aboriginal and Islander people passed through Fraser House and were returned to their respective communities. Staffers that I interviewed, as well as media reports, confirmed that these Indigenous patients blended into and participated in every aspect of the Fraser House healing milieu. For example, a Daily Mirror newspaper in April 1962 quotes Neville as saying, and I quote, "Aboriginals mixed freely with white patients in a special unit at the North Ryde Psychiatric Clinic. It is the first time in New South Wales that Aborigines have been accepted with equality in a psychiatric unit. They share the same wards and have the same privileges as white patients," end of quote. As an example of an asylum backward Aboriginal individual, Neville described the case of an isolate microencephalic Aboriginal person who presented with very few skills. He had the body of a 12-year-old, though he was an adult. He had no capacity for speech and would make aversive noises, for example, snarling and screeching. As well, he would get angry and bite. Within the unit, at Neville's instigation, this person was related to as if he was a lovable little puppy dog. This was very respectfully done and matched his optimal functioning. After this, he soon socialised, became friendly, contented, and easily fitted into Fraser House society. Neville described his cries as soon becoming harmonious and naturally expressive of mood, typically contentment and happiness compared to his prior screeching. He had probably moved close to the optimal functioning of his mind-body. Thereafter, he was attached to various factions, and he was able to move back into the community in a care house and fit in with house life as a normal microencephalic person rather than a dysfunctional abnormal one. Neville was fascinated that this person adjusted so well to social life, and his change was a convincer to Neville that emotional freeing up is the core of all therapy. To quote Neville, with no frontal cortex to speak of, how else could he have changed?
Again, I can see that this is another example of Neville sensing the context of this person and being guided by context.
Yes, that's right. It was tuning into exactly what would this person really want in their life and how would they like to be related to. The next case will introduce the concept of work as therapy. This case study comes from discussions I had with Neville during 1992 and further discussions in 1998. You recall that the patients got permission to set up and run a canteen that sold a range of items and also supplied drinks and foods for suppers between big and small groups. The proceeds of this canteen were used to buy and run a little red bus that was owned by the patients as a collective. The canteen committee was set up as part of a number of committees under the resocialising program. As an example of governance therapy in action, a person who had been elected to work in the canteen wanted to resign because some patients were asking him to break rules, and he could not say no. At the same time, he would get very disturbed and angry. The consensus in the group discussion about this was that it was very much in his interest to learn to say no without becoming disturbed. It was in his interest to stay working in the canteen and face this problem. He did stay on. He worked through the issue in the group discussions and in his canteen work experience till it was resolved. In a similar vein, an embezzler was knowingly elected to the canteen committee and, true to form, embezzled money. His actions and their consequences for everyone provided a potent context for change work during both big and small groups. Matters to do with the canteen were a constant generator of extreme emotional passion in big group. It was well known that this continual therapeutic struggle among canteen workers was also the source of funding for the patients' domiciliary and other outreach work, which patients and outpatients were committed to do and highly valued.
I find it interesting that they would put a known kleptomaniac in charge of money.
A standard practice at Fraser House was that all jobs would be assigned to patients who could not do them with adequate support so that they could learn to do them. As I said, the mess that this created was very therapeutic.
Well, in this program we've had examples of the catatonic, the microencephalic Aboriginal person, and two people having strife in the canteen, the person who could not say no and the kleptomaniac. We have also had an opportunity to see examples of the interconnectedness of the Fraser House way. We mentioned the potent significance of context, the use of free energy, and everything about the place was reinforced with return to functional living. Les, what have we got for us next time?
In the next program, I'll talk about a case showing Neville's process and the Fraser House model in superb action.
Thanks, Les. You can find Les's cultural keyline thesis on Fraser House on the internet at www.laceweb.org.au. I'm David Cruz for Radio TC International, and my guest today has been Les Spencer from Melbourne, Australia.